confess I'm pulling the bait and switch on all of you guys. We had intended in June when we sent in the abstract that we would have no problem, I guess it was, yeah, in June, have no problem getting these respirometry studies done. And then the respirometer arrived in about 7,000 parts. And Don Mullins has worked very hard to get that piece of equipment together. And as of 2 weeks ago, we got our first baseline data. So I really don't have anything to show you. So I'm switching and talking about another opportunity I had to do some research working on fumigation for bedbug control in a multi-unit facility. Now, a lot of you out here on the West Coast or down south do a lot of fumigation, see a lot of fumigation done for drywood termites and things like that. In Virginia, where I am, we rarely have any fumigation at all. And we don't have drywood termites. We do have some wood-boring beetles, but usually the infestation is not so extensive that anybody turns to fumigation. So it's generally really considered a last resort, and primarily due to the price. And in talking about bedbugs or other types of pests that get in structures too, that most people are turned off by the idea of fumigation because they just simply hear what the price is and think it's astronomical. But what we're starting to see now with the bedbugs is that in these sensitive type environments where you have people of varying degrees of delicacy and there's multi-unit situations, fumigation's looking more reasonable, especially in regard to if you compare a one-time sort of treatment to repeated applications of residual type insecticides, particularly if you have people who are health compromised that are the residents, or you have the insecticide-resistant bedbug populations, which of course we're seeing all over the country. Environmental complexity, when that's been touched on, and I'll show you some examples in a moment, or where we have local politics or publicity. And this was a situation that we were able to work in where some of these housing situations actually get a lot of publicity for having bedbugs in there, and then local politicians have some commentary on that. So I was working together with Mark Fisher of Dow AgroSciences to look at bedbug response to fumigation using Vicaine. And we had this wonderful opportunity to work in Reading, Pennsylvania, in the Samuel J. Huber apartments. These were built in 1970. They have 8 floors, 10 units per floor. Low-income residents, it's elderly, disabled people living in there. They have a long history of bedbug problems. At the time that we were there to do the fumigation, they had numbers on about 40 out of their 80 units total had been treated for bedbug problems using conventional methods, and they still had plenty of bedbugs. And so they were looking at not having to do this constant retreatment. Some of the factors, of course, that are contributing to the bedbug infestations is that you had residents that would be moved from one unit to another for a bunch of different reasons. Of course, we had residents that would be visiting each other. Also, the sharing of belongings. Somebody gives somebody else a couch or gives somebody else a mattress or a lamp, something like that. And even these communal areas here, this is down on the bottom floor. You know, this is kind of a stark environment, but almost everyone in that facility at some time or another will be down there either meeting their friends, watching TV, or more often waiting to be picked up and given a ride to somewhere. So this is sort of a central area where you wait to be picked up and go to your doctor's appointment, that sort of thing. Why the conventional treatments had failed? Well, because most of our treatments, the insecticide treatments, are baseboard, crack and crevice type applications, be they dust or liquid. You just look at a situation like this and go, okay, well, how many cracks and crevices are there? And what do you do about bedbugs that are up here in between sheets of paper and things like that where you cannot really treat? This place, where do you find a baseboard? You can't get within 3 feet of the baseboard. And of course, all of these stuffed animals, just like Mike was showing, you know, they have bedbugs all over them. How could you even get the treatment done? This is the other wall in that apartment. If you just think, you know, how many cracks and crevices are there? You can see why these treatments have been failing. And with these people who are health compromised, how many applications are going to have to be made in their apartment to try and deal with their bedbug problem? Will any of them succeed? And certainly they had plenty of bedbug problems here. You can see this is the underside of a box spring. Here's on one of the mattresses. You have a lot of first instars and, of course, hatched eggs there. These are in 3 different apartments, the mattresses. So here's our bedbugs clustering, I guess. These guys don't have any water balance problems, I guess, or else the females just don't like the males based on some of the other talks that we've heard. They're kind of getting spaced out there. So starting to work at this site. Like I said, Mark Fisher of Dow AgroSciences and I were working together with J.C. Ehrlich Company, who actually did the treatment for us. And one thing that we understood from the housing people is that this building was unique in that it was a single concrete pour. So at the time it was built, they put up form boards down here and then eventually had to get a crane and kept pouring the concrete down. And the advantage of this situation is that it was an easily sealable building, at least so we were told. Tape and seal was the type of method that we were using here instead of putting a tent over the entire building. But we still had to have the doors and windows and air conditioning units sealed. So here we are, Ehrlich is taping the doors up and having to seal the air conditioning units. Now my part of this, this is when you look at the glamorous career that you had envisioned, is climbing around in these infested apartments looking for bed bugs, and I also had to transport samples up from Virginia Tech, live bed bugs in containers. We had them in these glass vials that had a fabric type top. Groups of adults, nymphs, and eggs. We were particularly interested in the effects of fumigation on eggs because that's the big question. You know, have you gotten rid of everything? Do you have anything left over in that apartment facility that's going to hatch later? And I also collect bed bugs at the site so we could show not only was the fumigation able to kill the Virginia Tech bed bugs, but also the bed bugs that were actually there. So I also had to bring up some controls that made the long drive up to Pennsylvania and then hung around in the apartment building for a while and then were driven back. Okay, the site opened at 1 o'clock and I had not seen any of it. We managed to get in there. The fumigation was going to start at 6 o'clock, so we had that time period in there, that 5 hours, to select 5 floors that we were going to test on. I needed 5 rooms per floor, so that's why I was looking, crawling around in all of these apartments looking for bed bug samples and places to place the samples I had brought with me. And the air conditioning was turned off, so the surface temperatures that I measured in the hall were between 80 and 90 degrees. So if you're crawling around on your hands and knees in 80 to 90 degrees in these very dark apartments trying to pick off bed bugs, you just wonder, how did I get here? So, interesting thing to do. You can see the quality of some of these mattresses here. I have a couple of my samples that are stuck in these holes. And then this big jar here, these are samples of bed bugs that were actually collected off of this same mattress. The sample placements, I was looking very specifically for where either I had collected bed bugs in that apartment or where bed bugs might be. So this is a coffee table that actually had cushions, so I've got my samples down here. This is a mattress that somebody was keeping on the floor. I had my samples under there. Okay, then Vicaine has been used commercially for about 46 years, but not really extensively for bed bug control. So we were very interested to see how this treatment would work. And the Fumiguide system was used to calculate our half-loss time, which is basically the concentration that's introduced into the building over hours of exposure, okay, to see how long we can keep that concentration at a certain level to get the bed bugs killed. The fumigant then was introduced to each floor, and then the concentrations were monitored over time using the Fumiscope. So here you can see turning on the Vicaine, and it goes through all of these hoses up into the different locations in the building. This is the amount of sulfural fluoride that was applied at the front stairwell, back stairwell, and then the first through the 8th floors. The ones that you see here in yellow are the floors that we actually had our bed bug samples on, we were keeping track of. So it was about 250 pounds of Vicaine that was actually put on these individual floors. And here you have the half loss time in this last column. And you can see going from the top down to the bottom, our half-loss time was about 20 hours or so. And then, of course, on the first floor, because you have the fumigant coming down, was about double that same length of time. Okay, after the fumigation was done, 6 o'clock the next morning, the building was aerated. So they go in with the contained breathing apparatus and basically run up the stairs and try and open everything up and then unseal it on the outside. And then I went in there to collect the samples after it had been aerated and take pictures. And the first thing you can see is here are all the dead bed bugs that have fallen down underneath the bed. This is in front of a heater that ran along the wall, so we had a lot of dead bed bugs in a bunch of places. And basically the effects on the bed bug samples, these are some adult bed bugs after the fumigation. These are my control bed bugs, which were perfectly alive, made the trip very safely and everything. So we got a lot of mortality real fast. And then here's the eggs. This is what we were the most interested in. We couldn't tell immediately from the eggs after the fumigation whether they were viable or not. You couldn't tell by looking at them. So this is actually 6 days later. These are my control eggs. You can see they're developing. They've got their little eye spots and everything. But the fumigated eggs then pretty much within a couple days started to shrivel up, and we knew that they would probably no longer be viable. So our adult bed bugs, fumigated versus controls, we had no mortality in the controls for either the adults or nymphs after 7 days. All of our adults and nymphs were dead at the end of the fumigation. You could look at them, so 14 hours they were dead. Our controls, eggs hatch. We had about 10% of them hatch at day 6, 61% at day 7, 97% at day 8, and we had no eggs hatch for 35 days that we had fumigated. And those that I collected, the bed bugs that I collected while out there in the apartment complex, we had 100% mortality at 14 hours also. So using the fumiguide, we were able to determine how much fumigant needed to go into this building, and we were able to say, okay, fine, you know, that killed all the bed bugs and killed all the bed bug eggs. But what we didn't know really is what the concentration of the fumigation was of the fumigant over time, and whether bed bug eggs would actually be killed at lower concentrations than we had put in there. I just have to point out this picture of Chad Gore. Like me, Chad worked on German roaches for several years, and this is the kind of excitement we get for working on bed bugs now after spending so many times with the German roach. So he was thrilled to be working on the bed bugs. Right, Chad? Okay, so next we went to fumigation in containers so we could actually watch the fumigant over time. And our objectives here were to measure the concentration over time and determine the dosage accumulation and take a look at the half-loss time. We also wanted to evaluate the effects of sulfuryl fluoride on bed bug eggs at the 1x, which is typically used for drywood termites, the 3x, which is the recommended dose for bed bugs, and then the 5x. Application rates for Vicaine, and just evaluate the utility of these containerized fumigations for bed bug management. So first thing I did, rented a big giant Ryder truck and went over to Virginia Tech facilities and said, hey, why don't you give me a bunch of furniture that I can go put a bunch of bed bugs in, and we're going to test it with a fumigant and see if it works. Now, luckily, I have a good relationship with our dormitory facilities because of their previous bed bug problems, so they really couldn't say no to me. So they gave me a bunch of furniture, and I went to the Dodson Brothers Exterminator headquarters, that's in Lynchburg, Virginia, and loaded up the furniture into U-Haul trailers. They were about 400 cubic feet, so this is your standard 12 by 6 by 5 and a half U-Haul trailer. And we had three sets of furniture in each trailer so we could get good replication of everything. So here we are, Eddie's putting the furniture into the trailer. And then again, my job was bringing the bed bug samples so that we could put groups of 10 adult bed bugs, 10 nymphs, and 20 eggs that were divided into three containers. So we basically had 9 sets of bugs in there. And then the bed bugs were installed in the furniture. And this is kind of what it looked like. I tried to put them in places that would be hard to get and where we see bed bugs. So I've got a vial here at the back of a drawer that I'm putting back in the chest of drawers. This is the eggs. We actually had those in a closed petri dish inside this glass jar and then now stuck in a drawer. Stuffing the adults and nymphs down into the chairs, that's about as far as I could get those. Then we have those mattresses sort of stacked together, so these are eggs and then I've got adults and nymphs kind of stuffed in there. And then we had our monitoring equipment set up in back of this Ryder truck that became our office for a couple of days, where we had the fumoscope in there, some data loggers, and then the monitoring hoses that were running in and out of the U-Haul trailers. Also had my control bed bugs in there in the truck. So basically we had three U-Hauls set up. One was at the 1x rate, one we treated at the 3x rate, one we treated at the 5x rate on the first day, and then we did the whole thing again the next day. Then the monitoring hoses and the hoses to introduce the fumigant were put in along with a fan to get everything up and circulating, and then they were sealed. And then we used a yellow jacket scale for weighing the fumigant at the time of introduction. And then based on this cubic footage, we used the fumiguide to determine the number of pounds of sulfuryl fluoride that needed to be put into each trailer. And then the fumoscope then measured these concentrations, and so we watched how the concentrations changed over time, essentially, inside of these U-Haul U-Haul trailers, hoping to get the appropriate ounce hours. It's called the CT. Make sure that that had been achieved, and then we were able to aerate after that. So here's kind of what the fumigant was doing. Down here on the x-axis, we have the elapsed time since introduction, and then this is the concentration of sulfural fluoride in grams per cubic meter on the y-axis. And you can see this is the 1x rate, so it only goes up to the 70 grams per cubic meter. And the first line I want to point out is this blue line here. This is the first day, and we put the fans in there, turned them on, had them on for just a few minutes. Okay, this is a small amount of fumigant going into this U-Haul trailer. We turned the fan on for a few minutes and then turned it back off. And what you could see, we had a pretty high half-loss time, and the fumigant stayed pretty consistent with the fan off. And then about 135 minutes or so, it was time for us to aerate because the CT had been achieved. Now, one thing we noticed is the next day, and we decided to turn the fans on and leave them on the entire time, and you'll see why in my next couple of slides. But one of the things we discovered is if we left the fan on the entire time, we probably got the fumigant mixed real well in the beginning, but it also, in these sort of leaky, even though we sealed them up, U-Hauls, that we would start to see the fumigant dissipate much more quickly. So we've got a really nice slope on the line there. And of course, our half-loss time went way, way down. You know, we lost a lot. The half-loss time was real quick. At the 3x level, now we're putting in more pounds of fumigant, and we really found out that this fan thing was kind of critical and sort of delicate how you worked it. The blue line here, we had the fan on only for a few minutes, and what you can see is then we started losing the fumigant in the second trailer right away, so much so that at 115 minutes, the fumigide is telling us we need to add more or we're not going to hit that concentration, that CT, the concentration over time that we need. So more was put in. And then you can see it starts to drop down again, and then we had reached our CT here, and we have to stop it, and it's time to aerate. Having the fan on the entire time, now we have, you notice our y-axis goes up to 140. So this is a much flatter line than the one that you saw on the previous slide. But having the fan on, again, we got kind of better mixing of the material right from the beginning, and so that kind of controlled our half-loss time and made it look like it was a less confusing thing to interpret. We didn't have to add more fumigant in there, and it looked like a better way. But again, what we saw is having that fan on the whole time, we do start pushing the fumigant out these leaky parts of the trailer at some point. Okay, this is the 5x rate. And again, here's where we have the brown line is where we have the fan on the entire time, so we get that same sort of similar line. Now we've added in more fumigant. Okay, it mixes better. Our y-axis is going up here to 200. But where we only had the fan on for a few minutes, you can see that the fumigant pretty much just settles in the bottom of the trailer. And our monitoring was up on the top, so you really can't. We got down here to 115 minutes. Looked like we had to add more fumigant. Then it came down very rapidly again, and then we had to add more. But in both cases, I can say our CT was achieved, and at this point where you see the ends of these lines, that's where we're aerating. So the aeration begins, and we take out the bed bug samples. And one thing I can say, at the 5x rate, the 3x rate, we killed all the adults, we killed all the nymphs, and in spite of our fan problems, we had none of our eggs hatch, even at the 1x rate, which is below the label rate. In our controls, we had about 96% hatch. So our conclusions here is that the containerized fumigation did kill the bed bugs and their eggs at all the rates that we tested. Certainly, we found out that the same types of containers had different half-loss times. There's a lot of variability between these U-Hauls, even when you seal them up. The fan operation following introduction is really important to reach the equilibrium, but you got to kind of figure out how long you need to have that fan on. And it depending on how much fumigant you're using. We did find out, too, that fumigation looks like a viable option, especially in these more complicated structures, multi-unit housing. Same thing with containers for taking care of people's stuff, particularly when other treatments have failed repeatedly or they have limited value, that you know when you walk in there and do that treatment that pest control operator is going to have to come back over and over again. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah, Mike?
Dean, I was just curious, and you mentioned it was low income,
high-rise housing. What did you do with the people?
Oh, okay. I didn't get have time to cover that, but I'm glad you asked. The people had to have a checklist, and they were asked to do all of these things in the apartment before the fumigation started, and they had to post that outside their door, and then they had to find alternative accommodation for 2 days, and they were not allowed to take their stuff in a suitcase. They had to carry everything in a plastic bag because they didn't want the suitcases coming back in. But housing certainly did recognize that those people, with even the little bit of stuff that they took, could bring the bed bugs back, and were very concerned about our egg data, because they wanted to know that we had killed everything so they could say to everybody at least once, you know, if you see any bed bugs from now on, it's because you brought them in. That time?
One more.
How about Ed right there?
What was the cost of doing that apartment building if it was done?
We had one of the J.C. Ehrlich people quoted, I think it was $57,000 just for the product. Is that right, Mark?
I don't remember.
Yeah, he named this number offhand in the back of a truck when I asked him about how much this costs. So I don't know how accurate that is. So, but that's the number he threw out. Okay. Then take the young lady.
One more.
Well, it's interesting you asked. She's asking if we're monitoring this building now for reintroduction. We're not, and they were very concerned about one resident in particular, the housing people, that he was going to go stay in his own van, and they knew that this van was infested, and they were going to voluntarily take his van and fumigate it before they allowed him to move back in. So they knew that people would be moving him back. Okay, thank you so much.